You know, perhaps it would be a good idea to give those of you present who are not of a certain age an overall idea of what a rambling house would have looked like in their heyday. Well, firstly, a rambling house is another name for what we in the northern part of Ireland would call a Cailin house, which is a house or one of many houses in a locality where people gathered at night to talk, sing, tell stories, recite poems or dance. Playing cards was another very popular pastime, especially over the winter months, and when coming towards Christmas Eve, prizes would be geese and ducks. This is before radio, television or any other modern entertainment devices. Indeed, the only mechanical form of entertainment might have been a gramophone, which to the uninitiated was a record player that got its power by being wound up by a handle. There was, of course, the accordion, melodeon or fiddle, and failing that, there was always someone who could lilt, which is where the person would use their mouth and tongue to create a tune that could be danced to.
Now, to give you an idea what a rambling house would have looked like, you have to imagine a long, low, single-storey thatched cottage with a door, and a half door approximately in the middle, you know, with a window to its right and two windows to its left. There would also have been a window at the back, and that would be in the back wall of the house to facilitate rooms that we'll come to in a minute or two. During the day and all through the summer, the half door would be closed. Now this would be to keep out the occasional hen or duck that might be getting impatient for its food, and over which was useful for leaning to have a conversation with a passerby. Only in the worst of weather or at night would the main door be closed. That main door was handy, you know, for tying on a Halloween night there, and the small windows that couldn't get out there, you know. To have this door closed during the day, give out the message that visitors would not be welcome. Suffice to say, there were not many doors closed in Ireland of this area. When you lifted the latch and let yourself in, there was no knocking in those days or phoning in advance to see what would be convenient to visit. You entered a room which would have consisted of a living room, kitchen, general purpose area where all the cooking, eating and living activities took place.
To one side would have been a room mostly referred to as the upper room, which was for the mother and father of the family. And at the other end of the house, what was termed the lower room, which was for other family members. Now this lower room would normally have had two bed areas shuttered off from the main room. That allowed their occupants a semblance of privacy. The lower room's only other uses were for the twice yearly mass known as the stations, and where the priests were given the station breakfast after mass. Its other use was for waking the dead. The upper and lower rooms would have had a bit of lino on the floor, but the kitchen would have had a floor covered in stone flags, similar to the tiles of today.
Now, going back to how the house would have looked, up against the gable wall that separated the kitchen from the upper room, you had an open fire that would have cooked a fair size of a pig located below the chimney breast that could take the smoke from an ocean liner, except in some cases where a chimney didn't have a good draw. The smoke wasn't drawn up the chimney properly. This was usually when the wind would be in a particular direction, or as they would say, the wrong out of wind. On these occasions, the entire household would have got about the same amount of smoke as any kipper would have got when you were smoking.
Now, in this fireplace would be equivalent of a good-sized barrel load of turf, over which hung the crook, which was a right-angled piece of metal, one side run vertically alongside the fire, and the other side stretched horizontally over the fire, and from this hung a series of chains and hooks of varying lengths from which a number of cooking utensils hung. Now, any good housewife could control the cooking of a whole meal by raising and lowering the various containers using the chains and hooks, whose various lengths increased or decreased the distance of a particular utensil from the centre of heat. Now, below this fire was the ash pit, where a full week's ash would gather before needing to be cleaned out. Now, again in front of this would be a large flagstone or a single slab of rock measuring perhaps 4 or 5 feet long by 3 or 4 feet wide. Now, sometimes this was in the middle of the floor as well. And underneath, in many cases, would be an open space. This is for dancing a shannos, or old-style dance, and the dancer's hobnail boots would be given more emphasis by the drum effect of the space below the slab of stone when they sent sparks flying in all directions. Now, sometimes there was a skeleton of a horse's head placed in this space, which apparently added to the acoustic effects of the dancer's hobnail boots.
Apart from cooking and giving heat, the fire served another useful purpose, because the door to the lower room was always directly opposite the hearth, thus giving enough light sent to this room, doing away with the need for a second lamp or candle. On the subject of lighting, one of the earlier forms was wall-mounted lamp with a container for paraffin oil on its base. This would have been known as a single burner, a burner for a wick that drew up oil. This itself enveloped in a glass globe, and to increase the light, a circular bright tin reflector on the wall mounting. As this reflector lost its shine, the silver lining, or the tinsely paper as we called it from a cigarette paper, was placed into use as a replacement. Waste not, want not. Now this was followed by oil lamps with 2 wicks, which were called double burners, and indeed some right swanky ones were taken back from America by visiting relatives. Now the ultimate was a tilly lamp, which still had paraffin oil container, but had a gossamer-like globe known as a mantle, which after being kick-started by metal at its purge, gave out a tremendous amount of light, and was worked by pumping air into the oil container and then vaporised up onto the mantle. Now the only downside to this lamp was that its pressure needed pumping up regularly as it dimmed down.
However, the pride of the house was the dresser, which was similar to modern dressers in both shape and size, but that's where the similarity stopped. The dresser would have been bedecked with large woollen pattern plates for the two top rows, and as you moved down the tiers, the plates got smaller. Now, there were also the bowls, or bowls, which were used for every day for serving tea or porridge to the family and close friends. The bowls would have been similar to a fair-sized crockery soup bowl of today. It was only at a wake, stations, or for any old visiting Yanks that the woman of the house would produce a half set of bone china, and it was she and she alone who handled this valuable asset. Occasionally, the woman of the house would make a present of a woollen pattern plate to a visiting relative, but only the American ones. Along the walls of the house would be forms or long stools capable of accommodating 6 to 8 good-sized adults, and both sides of the fire were reserved for the elders of the family or those of high standing in the community. There were many other fixtures and sleeping arrangements built into the kitchen, and hopefully we'll come to them in time. Now, we'll give you a sample of the sort of tale you might expect to hear at such a rambling house from a proper rambling house raconteur, a Mr. Bertie Bryce.
That hopefully you have a clear impression of the house, we'll come to what might have transpired on a typical rambling night. A good rambling house was never too far for visitors to travel to, be it even a good bicycle ride away. Sometimes the first item on the agenda would be the reading of the paper. Not everyone got a daily newspaper in those days. The news contained therein would then be broken down and discussed with a sincerity that would today be the envy of Dalian. Indeed, these sons and daughters of the country could have given a more discerning analysis of the world at large than many of the today's politicians. It wouldn't be long until someone would be called for a song. The best guide you had to the ability of the singer was the length of time it took for him or her to be forced to give a bar or two. The better the artist, the longer the encouragement, and likewise the opposite. The melodeon would be handed to the person best known to have the ability to play it, with similar amounts of encouragement necessary to get the player to even take it into their hands, never mind play. However, as soon as the necessary rituals had been dispensed with, a good night's music and song was then guaranteed.
Now, interspersed with the music and song would be recitations, not poems. Now, for some reason that I'm not aware of, but hopefully somebody will make me aware of, I don't remember anybody ever being invited to say a poem. It was always a recitation. Then, of course, for the younger ones came the stories of ghosts, fairies, tales of men with super strength, and in areas near the sea, tales of wild knights and great seamanship.
There were always the card knights, in most areas 25s or 45s. And as I said earlier, coming towards Christmas there would be prizes of geese or ducks. The best card players I'm aware of took home 4 geese after a night's playing of cards. His mother cooked one for the Christmas dinner, and she reared the other 3. The games of cards were taken extremely serious. Reputations could be made or lost depending on someone's ability to trump another player at an appropriate stage of the game, and woe betide the poor beginner who trumped his partner at a crucial stage of a game of 25.
Now, unless the gathering was for an American wake, which is a scale fad that'll run a little long story, the refreshments served would have consisted of a bowl of strong tea, accompanied by homemade scone bread, liberally covered in homemade butter. No fancy low-fat or omega-3 spreads in those days. Now, to ensure a future warm welcome, it would have been essential for the food recipient to bestow plenty of praise on the mum of the house on the quality of her tea, bread, but especially the butter.